First, the international community is taking action against Belarus following its crackdown on protesters since its August 9th election. Longtime President Alexander Lukashenko was declared the winner. Opposition parties, the U.S. and the European Union, all say the election was fixed. That set off mass protests in the capital city of Minsk. Thousands have been arrested. There's also been widespread evidence of abuse and torture. At least four people have reportedly died in the demonstrations. Just yesterday, the European Union imposed sanctions on 40 Belarusian officials, not Lukashenko. Earlier this month, the U.S. State Department announced it no longer recognizes him as the legitimate president. What does all this mean for the relationship between America and Belarus, and how might our election next month change our approach in the region? David Schultz is a professor of political science at law at Hamline University and a professor of law at the University of Minnesota. He's also taught, lectured, and spoken in Eastern Europe and will lead a panel discussion on the events in Belarus on Monday. David, welcome back to the show.
Thank you very much for having me.
David, President Lukashenko has been in charge of this country since 1994. Talk about the origins of his rule in this post-Soviet state.
Well, let's think about where it's located first off. Belarus is located between Poland, Russia, Ukraine, and Lithuania. And you're correct. It was part of the Soviet Union for many years. And when the Soviet Union broke up in 1991, Belarus became independent. And Lukashenko was elected in 1994. And at the time that he was elected, he decided to sort of keep on the path of where the Soviet Union used to be, kept the industries nationalized, kept sort of a path in the direction that looked very much like what the Soviet Union used to look like. And after that one free election in 1994, there's been questions regarding about the fairness and integrity of the rest of the elections. In the last few years, the economy of Belarus has slowed down. The population has become much more highly educated, and there's been demands for change within the country. The elections that happened back in August are highly contested by the population with Belarus, with many people claiming that they were rigged. And in the last few weeks, there's been significant just demonstrations of what, over 100,000 people every weekend, with the government responding by arresting many of those demonstrators. So that kind of sets the context in terms of what's happening there.
And what's been the American position toward Belarus over the years?
Over the years, I think the United States has taken a position that for the most part, you know, Belarus, which used to be part of the Soviet Union, was kind of more within the, let's say, the Russian Federation's zone of influence. Russia is very concerned about making sure that Belarus stays under the Russian zone, kind of a buffer between it and the European Union and, more importantly, in NATO. But in the last couple of years, as Lukashenko has aged, and some people describe him, quote here, as the last dictator of Europe, as he's sort of aging, the United States has started to view potentially that Belarus could be maybe possibly moved more towards the West, much in the same way that we're seeing similar efforts to try to move Ukraine or Georgia, also as countries towards the West. And so it's been below the radar screen for most Americans. Most United States citizens don't hear much about that country or efforts, but certainly within, let us say, the diplomatic circles, it has been a increasing country of importance. And I know when I've gone over to lecture over in Belarus, there has been interest in terms of me being able to talk to people over there in terms of discussing American politics and American policy to educate the students over there.
What has been the American response so far to this country, as you say, that hasn't been a household word for most Americans since the election, since the protests?
Yeah. I think at first it was somewhat quiet. We know Mike Pompeo, Secretary of State, has increasingly tried to ratchet up a little bit some of the rhetoric, is trying to impose or lead some sanctions. But still, it's a delicate balance that's here, because one of the concerns that the citizens of Belarus have, they don't want it to look like the United States or NATO, or that the European Union is trying to pull Belarus over into the Western European orbit for fear, perhaps, that it might trigger some international events. What's really going on in Belarus is that this is not an anti-Russian movement. It is not necessarily a pro-Western movement. It's more what? It's a democracy movement. You know, many of us might have heard a few years ago the different color revolutions, you know, like the Velvet Revolution, the Orange Revolutions, and Purple Revolutions in different countries over in Eastern Europe. Think of this also as a indigenous democratic movement, of which the United States, again, is trying to walk a delicate path. It would like to see democracy in Belarus, but it's certainly not going to take actions, I think, at this point, that are going to trigger, let us say, an adverse reaction from other people and other countries across the world.
And what are you watching for next in the country?
What I'm watching for next at this point are the demonstrations going to continue. At what point, I think the really critical issue becomes, so far that Lukashenko has been able to keep control of the military and support him. And I'm going to draw an analogy. Back when the Berlin Wall came down in 1989, you know, in Eastern Europe or in Germany, what happened at some point is when the guards no longer supported the regime, that's really what brought down the East German regime. And that's what I'm looking for to see here. At what point, if at all, does the military, does the KGB, and they still call it the KGB in Belarus, do they continue to support Lukashenko? Or at what point do they get overwhelmed by the demonstrators? Do they get overwhelmed by the democracy movement? And at that point, if that were to happen, that will be a critical tipping point in terms of what's happening in that country.
Talking to David Schultz from Hamline University. Want to switch gears for our last few minutes and look a little closer to home. I know you and I think everybody is watching this news from the White House, the president and the first lady, among others, having positive COVID-19 test results. What is your reaction to that news?
Well, my reaction is in thinking in terms of sort of two things down the line. Remember, I'm a law professor also. So I've been telling people that I won't get into the politics of whether or not, you know, about what he has done in terms of his advocacy or his opposition to what mask wearing and the virus, but instead to think about questions of what happens if he's incapacitated in terms of presidential succession or in terms of Mike Pence having to step in temporarily. And with that, let's say it goes in a different direction. I'm thinking about what if, for example, Donald Trump has to withdraw from the presidential race in terms of what that means. And so that's where my focus is turning now. And I've been sort of doing a little bit of writing about that today, sketching out what the Constitution says, what the Republican National Committee rules say. And the simple answer is that the presidential succession or taking care of the problems that an ill or incapacitated President Trump may face are easy by comparison to what to do with an incapacitated candidate, Donald Trump. And so we're looking at two different sets of issues here.
What happens, just speaking more generically now, if a presidential candidate, you know, they've been through the nomination and for whatever reason, they're no longer able to continue the race. What is the procedure for coming up with a new candidate after ballots are already printed?
Well, Republican National Committee Rule 9 allows them to pick whomever they want to replace, let's say in this case, Donald Trump. It doesn't have to be Mike Pence, but it could be. That's the easy part. The harder part now is, I don't know how many tens of millions of ballots have already been cast at this point. We have, with what, 31 days to go, the ballots are already printed up. What happens in terms of replacing Donald Trump on the ballot across the 50 different states is a legal question for each of the 50 states. But even beyond the legal question, there's a practicality and a technical question of how would you actually be able to replace his name, get somebody else on the ballot, and actually print the ballots or have them available for election day, let alone now go back and take care of all those absentee ballots. So these are going to be the issues that I want to say we all hope don't have to occur, and we all wish him well, but we have to be thinking about these practicalities.
David, we'll leave it there. Thanks for joining us today.
My pleasure. Thank you very much.
David Schultz is a professor of political science and law at Hamline University and professor of law at the University of Minnesota. We talked to him mostly about the events in Belarus and how America is reacting to the situation in Eastern Europe.